Thank you, Bruce, for a nice introduction, and thank you for choosing this presentation, and thank you all the team for organizing this important symposium. I'd like to shift a little bit attention from a big data perspective, from perspective of farm organization. I work for the Iowa Soy Association, which is a commodity group. It's a group of farmers, and what I would like to discuss that why we engage in this big data business, what our objectives, scales, and tools, some data collection processes, reporting techniques. But the most of my time, I would like to spend a little bit giving you example and case studies, how we use this data, specifically some analytical techniques, especially for making decision on farm. My group on Farm Network, it was organized about 15 years ago, and as previous speaker mentioned, the problem is we can collect a lot of data, but how can we use this data? So the objective of this group to organize farmers across the state and use this data, use these technologies, and specifically target specific practical problems. We usually work with about 400 farmers in Iowa across the state. I'd like to mention that there are similar groups across the country, like Indiana, East Coast, and other, which have a similar structure and similar objective as ours. So again, we use a variety of tools, both from precision perspective and analytics. One important thing I would like to stress that we would like farmers to get engaged. We would like farmers to not only collect data, look at colorful map, we want them to think about the data, what this data means. So we call this approach participatory learning or adaptive management. And by doing this, we hope that farmers can identify this critical problem or specific technologies that work exactly in these specific conditions. But another important part of these studies and data, which I'll show you later, that we want to quantify production risk. And of course, weather is number one risk in production, both corn and soybean. We use different types of methodology, both experiments and surveys. This is an example of a statewide survey. So we can survey different type of questions on a state scale, like here, a watershed scale. So these are different type of surveys with a lot of fields, a lot of management and data involved. One of the important part, we would like these all surveys to follow specific protocol. And the idea is that by following this protocol, we can pull data. We can pull this data, aggregate, and get some specific results. One of the key tool we use in this on-farm evaluation is so-called on-farm replicated strip trials. As Gregory mentioned, these are specifically designed to be simple, relevant, and appropriate for farmers. It could be just two, three, or four rates of fertilizer or chemicals. It can be technology or something else. And again, we would like to have some kind of treatment intervention to get sense of this specific site yield response in these trials. We also, to do these trials, if you ever done something with farmers, you know it's not easy. Farmers are busy, they're business people, and when you want to do this, everything can go completely wrong. So we develop a variety of tools which can help us set up this on-farm trial. And this is the example of plot planner, where an agronomist, a farmer, or someone else, a group leader, for example, can use this plot planner using specific field size, planter equipment, fertilizer equipment, spray equipment. We can design and develop a plan for specific plot, specific field, and so on. So in this case, for example, we have three or four treatments. We also do a lot of different techniques how to collect data. We mentioned that technologies allow us to collect a lot of data. But still, we practice one-on-one conversation, one-on-one interaction with farmers. We have agronomists or group leaders which talk with farmers every day. Also, we develop a variety of online tools like this one, which allows farmers and agronomists enter data in relatively simple way with fewer errors, we hope. And finally, we also use a lot of new technologies from industry, telematics, like all kind of tools, John Deere GD-Link, Lab 6040, Agri, all kind of new technologies which allows us to collect data on the fly and relatively rapidly. One of the questions which was brought up today is data quality. We can have a million of data, but if this data are bad quality, it's not appropriate. So over time, we adopted a variety of tools to control this data quality. One of these is the aerial imagery. We use aerial imagery a lot, especially late season, which gives a good snapshot what's happening within the field. We also developed a variety of customized GIS tools, which also has helped to sort off all these garbage data, or all these data which are not appropriate in many situations. And again, another important piece is visual inspection and two-way interaction with farmer. It's very important. Because sometimes when we have a group meetings, a farmer can say, well, I didn't tell you guys, I had a manure application a couple years ago. So it tells the complexity that we have to control this data quality from different perspective. A lot of discussion here was about clouds and data privacy. We didn't go to clouds yet, and that's intentionally because our board, our farmers are very concerned about data privacy, data integrity, and all kind of ramification with data. So a lot of data are processed in-house. We also have contracts with universities and private companies, but the board and the farmers are very sensitive about data, so we still kind of wait on what will happen in the future. But we are developing online database, a data warehouse, which allows to post all of the results online. So all of these field-level reports, all these kind of trials which have its chemistry, fertilizer, corn, soybean, all kind of technologies we test, the result, the field level results online. If you go online on this web page has the data, all of the field level reports from 2007 through 2013. And as I speak now, I think they are trying to upload data which we are collecting right now. So these are results from different watershed, part of Iowa, and different projects. Here's an example of some of the field level reports for population trials. Population trials are very common because of seed cost and ability of modern planters to use variable rate planting. But this is an example where all of these field level reports are online, and anyone can go see the results. There are some specific tools which allows to do simple summaries, like maybe average, some confidence interval, or plug prices for input and get a sense of return on investment. But again, we don't share spatial data. We also post here scouting data. Usually someone, either interns or agronomists or farmer, go outside and collect some scouting data during the season. So here's an example of some of the reports which are posted, as I mentioned right now. We report all experimental units. These are yields for these experimental units for one of the trial. We report basic management information, weather, spatial weather from Iowa Environmental MeasureNet to give farmers some sense about rainfall and impact rainfall on production. But the core of this study is focused on yield response, not yield. And the most important part, I think, which I deal a lot of, how to aggregate this data and how to get sense what this data means. So today I'll briefly describe some tools which we adopted and using to analyze this data, aggregate data. And again, I mentioned that to aggregate data, we use a common methodology, common protocol, and common technique. So one of these tools we adopted is different type of multi-level or hierarchical modeling, stochastic simulation, Bayesian analysis, all kind of risk assessment tools we use, and also for the last couple of years, especially we helped to calibrate adapt and model a couple of years ago, which Greg mentioned, and this year we have a project with Iowa State researchers which focus on using one of their cropping system model, EPSIN, for doing some management issue related to soybean. So again, this is the list of tools we adopted and used to aggregate data. I mentioned about this hierarchical multi-level analysis. We not only work with individual experimental units, we work with spatial data. In a lot of these trials, we can aggregate yields at specific distance, create grids, and do yield response. Again, we focus on marginal return, on yield response, and these yield responses are both in space and at different levels. And another issue with this type of analysis that a lot of different factors are at different levels too. Some of them like rainfall at the field level, spatial information within field. So in order to deal with this random variability at different levels, we adopted different techniques. And this is an example of one of the so-called population trials where we would have just two rates, this simple intervention. Some of these trials have treatment randomized, some don't, but we focus both on yield response in within fields and across fields. I mentioned about this hierarchical modeling example, which we adopted several times at several years ago. Some of these results are published. The board requires us to not only use, but also report this data in scientific publication. But why hierarchical modeling? Again, I mentioned that we deal with random variability at different scale, within field, across field. So this type of analysis allows us to deal with this variability and pool appropriately all these factors. And the key of hierarchical modeling that we can develop or identify this relationship at these different scales. One of the critical part of a decision-based system is Bayesian analysis, which both relate to hierarchical modeling and so on. Bayesian analysis, it's an important part in decision system, in decision theory. And of course, I put this scared formula, which I don't want to scare you right now, but my point is making that with computing power, because modern computers are so fast, all of this integration part several years ago was took a little bit of time. Now with modern computing powers, it takes very quickly. So we can use this all kind of stochastic simulation and estimate these conditional probabilities. And what it means that given the data from farmer, we can make intelligent prediction what will happen in new situation. So what it's all about. And again, there are a lot of different techniques, modern analytical techniques, which allows us to very intuitively pull this data and predict, making these intelligent predictions in new situation, which again, should be very helpful in making decision on the farm. So this is an example of population trials with soybean. I mentioned that farmers are interested in variable rate population, applying population variable rates, but how? There are so many different ideas how to do it. So we can use this very simple on farm trials. And what this analysis shows here, based on the Bayesian analysis on hierarchical modeling, that if they use two rates, and these rates are very close to what they apply, it's about 40% chance that they get economic yield response from the higher population rate across the state. Of course, we know that different factors have different effects, so we can go much deeper. We can separate effect of road spacing. We can separate the effect of timing, maybe spatial variability like sand content, and all kind of information. We're trying to develop this decision system based on these site-specific categories, which incorporate both spatial data and field-level data. And again, this is based on almost 100 trials we have done in Iowa in specific situations. So this is an example how we can get this data and make intelligent decision for a new or future situations. Another example, it's a multi-level analysis of these fungicide trials in Iowa on soybean. Those who are from South know that soybean rust was a big deal a couple years ago. What happened in central Iowa or Midwest, luckily we didn't get the disease, but we started applying a lot of fungicides. So about 30% of Iowa soybean gets fungicide application, which is raises concern about fungicide resistance. So several years ago, farmers organized and collected this data. This is about 200 trials across Iowa. And with these trials, we use aerial imagery, like example here, color infrared imagery, which indicates where these treatments went. We can see the strips here on this imagery. So the question is, can we be more predictive? Can we predict the risk of or benefit of this applying fungicide in such specific situations? So we have done analysis, and what we found very interesting that if we have a higher rainfall in spring, and this is cumulative rainfall in spring, with the higher rainfall, we would probably we are getting much higher yield response to these fungicides, which for different reasons. And this is the map of Iowa in spring rainfall because of a lot of spatial variability. By doing this information, we developed so-called online calculator. And this online calculator, using this Bayesian analysis, all this analytical tool I described, a farmer can go, he or she can enter soybean price, direct cost of application, make adjustment for rainfall, and this calculator online can spit some probabilities. So these probabilities will tell what's the chance of having above break-even yield response, what's the chance to have a break-even yield response, what's the range of profit from application of this specific treatment in this calculation. Of course, it's not recommendation, it's not forecast, but at least it's a risk type of analysis and tool which farmer can use in specific situation. So again, this is the way we collect data, analyze data, and develop these online tools, like this fungicide calculator. Another type of data we collect, it's a survey. Survey are very important. Survey gives us a snapshot from the top, what's happening and what kind of interaction happening at the specific levels across the state. So this is the Iowa. And last year, one of the issue with corn, as Gregory mentioned, with adapt management, that Iowa is very, Iowa has a range of practices. We have different timing forms and method application. Different farmers apply different rates. So the question is, what's the risk of specific practice to be excessive or deficient in specific situation? So we adopted the tool, it's a both tool, aerial imagery and stock nitrate test. And the stock nitrate test gives you after the fact information whether the corn had enough nitrogen or not. It's so-called nitrogen checkup. Essentially, it's like an exam you give to your students when you teach university courses. But what when you combine this data over time, you can start to estimate this risk. And this is data of almost 3,500 fields across Iowa. When we combine this data of stock test and the aerial imagery. So one of the idea is how we can quantify what there is to be deficient versus sufficient, or there is to be excessive versus sufficient and below. And of course, we have a lot of management information. We can look at this type of very intuitive statistical problem and see whether there is effect of management, nitrogen rate, previous crop, rainfall, tillage, all kind of variables, plus all kind of interaction. In this specific tool, we utilized so-called mixed level binomial model or logistic regression, and in this regression, we had random intercept and common slope. So the objective is to tell when and where farmer would get deficient or excessive nitrogen status. So here is the what we found, that rainfall in June is one of the most important factors which control this, the risk to be a deficient or deficient specific situation. And these are practices with different timing and nitrogen form. For example, we have full anhydrous ammonia, full liquid soy manure, we have a established nitrogen application, we have a spin application with anhydrous ammonia, and spin application of liquid nitrogen. And if you look at this effect of June rainfall on the risk to be deficient, we can see this some kind of S-shaped curve. Of course, we fixed the previous crop and rate. And again, it looks like here, from this prediction, based on this analysis, the practices which had anhydrous ammonia were less likely to be deficient than those practices that had liquid nitrogen applied either in spring or sideways, which indicates the complexity of nitrogen management we deal in Iowa, because even if you apply in spring or in summer and sideways, still the risk of nitrogen losses are still very high across Iowa. Another type of analysis, we can look, again, we can do this analytically and make prediction for situation. This is the effect of nitrogen rate. We can look how nitrogen rates affect the risk of being deficient across the state. And again, for these five nitrogen management categories like full anhydrous ammonia, liquid soy manure, spring anhydrous ammonia, or liquid nitrogen applied. And here, what I show in here, the difference between corn after corn and corn after soybean. And if you look at the optimal ranges for corn after corn and corn after soybean, you can see that corn after soybean looks like almost twice as likely to be deficient than corn after corn at this specific situation. So again, this is the type of analysis we are trying to do and report to farmers. We can do another type of analysis with this data, which relates to risk management. This is the example of so-called risk matrix. The risk matrix, you can think about risk matrix as a mortgage calculator. If you buy a house, you know what's your interest, right? And you can look how your interest and principal change. The same idea about this risk matrix. We can have a June rainfall. It's going to be extremely dry, normal, maybe wet. And you can look at different rates which farmers are interested in and see how these probabilities change. Now, what's important that this probability usually don't change much within the optimal range like here. But of course, if you take a rate lower than optimal, it goes up. But the critical piece here that farmer agronomists can look at this mortgage calculator and kind of see and think through whether in given situation they need to add extra nitrogen or not. Because what's happening often, we have extremely wet years and farmer wanted to apply more nitrogen, which is a lot of cases is either too risky or not profitable, which again, this type of analysis can help even adapt N model to make calibration and fine-tune those predictions on site-specific estimations. Another type of analysis we do, again, related to risk, it's how we can use within field variability and how this variability affect risk. This is an example of using the within field variability and how does it affect the risk to be excessive. We learned that if you have April through June rainfall, so the April through June rainfall controls the probability or risk to be excessive. Of course, we don't want to be excess, because excess which means that we either had too much nitrogen or we applied too much nitrogen or soil supplied too much nitrogen. So this is the stochastic simulation. The blue line, it's a typical field. So we can take this random effect, which is, if it's random effect zero, we would call it typical field, which is probably doesn't exist in reality. But if you have a typical field with random effect zero, the question is, how about if you have a field with below variability that typical? So we can do stochastic simulation. Again, the modern computers allow us to do very quickly. It's a simulation about 300,000 simulation. So what you can see that if variability less than typical, there is some shift. The distribution is not normal, so probability to be in excess is slightly higher. But what happens if you have a field which has a variability as twice as more as the typical field in Iowa. And by typical field, I mean it's either by imagery or by the stock test. So if you have a twice as more variability as a typical field, you can see that this distribution changes. And it tells that this variability within fields can be to some sense factored in your decision. So again, maybe the difference between 0.2 and 0.3 is not big, but still the variability within field would affect your decision, what you do with this data and how you make decisions about this data. You probably noticed that I talk a lot about about probabilities and what's the way to make interpretation of these probabilities. Of course, think about weather. In weather, we all accept that the weather forecast is in terms of probability. I think that's the same way with all of this issue with nitrogen or either risk of deficiency or excess. We can classify by different descriptive categories. If it's higher than 50, it could be moderate risk, high risk, very high risk. We can use different colors. We can use different signs. So all of this information from this data can be used for farmers to make decisions on these sides. And again, I show you some examples how we use data, how we collect data. We're still thinking what clouds will give us. And I mentioned that the board is very concerned about the privacy and data integrity. But what I show you here, some example how we can collect data and develop these tools, apply this tool, and hopefully make farmers better decisions. And I would like to stress that what I'm seeing, the data collection process is very relatively easy, right? We can collect a lot of data, but still extracting useful information is still very, very difficult. And a lot of time when you work with farmers, we sense that even if we have very sophisticated models, still farmers would like to check them. They have probably more information which can be used one-on-one rather than collecting data in different ways. So again, my last point is that it's very exciting time. It's exciting time because we can collect a lot of data, but also it's a challenging time how to get sense of this data in different ways. So that's my story.
Let's give Peter our round of applause, shall we? Really appreciate your presentation. Questions for Peter? I have a couple here that, yes, sir. Kip, if you could give him the mic and I'll come out.
So can you comment on like the effect of a prior on your data analysis? And I know for some time it's very difficult to like get prior information for some input variables.
So. Yeah, thank you. The question was about the effect of prior on our Bayesian analysis. It's a very important question in statistical sense. The sense of Bayesian analysis is to use prior information and make this conditional probabilistic estimation for the future. In the case I show, we use the conjugated prior, so it's very wide prior, which captures some sense of for the variability. Specifically for yield response data, we use normal prior, and for variances, we use gamma in most cases.
What about the... I mean, like for yield, you know it's normal.
Yeah, the question was, what if you use yield? In our analysis, we don't use yield per se. We use yield difference, which is yield difference between treatments. By using yield difference, that's very critical. Yield difference is usually normally distributed. That's very critical. For variances, those either usually gamma or beta. Thank you.
On the close to the end, your chart looking at probabilities and your recommendations, how did you come up with those? 0.3 is 1 in 3, right? Will a farmer accept a 1 out of 3 chance that your recommendation is wrong? I think think that threshold's got to be a lot more stringent than that for a farmer to accept that recommendation.
The question is about my descriptive categories for probabilities. There are different ways to approach your question. A lot of these decisions are binary. So the rationale here to put this category was binary because of, in most cases, if you cannot predict more than 50%, I think that's a bad case. But it can be specific. If you have more information, more data, of course you can fine-tune this data with more prediction and maybe some kind of confidence interval for each of these categories. But that's probably in the future. So I see your concern. All these categories can be classified different ways.
One more question. I have one. Do you think a public organization like yours has an advantage over more of a commercial organization, like we've heard from some of these other presenters here, that you're farmer supported and that type of an organization?
The question is about whether we have advantage compared with businesses and industries related to big data. In some sense, yes, because we are trying to be as a third-party, independent, farmer-related organization. But in other sense, not, because we still, the technology is the same. What we try to do, it's a partner with industry and universities, because a lot of this question can be solved either not by group like our. It's a joint effort, both from data technologies and even analytical solution to a lot of these problems.
How many members are there in the Iowa Soybean Association? How many farmer members?
The members, it's several thousand, six, seven, probably 10,000. We have different levels of membership. To be participate in these trials, farmers shouldn't be members. It's voluntary.
Okay, let's give Peter another round of applause.
Thank you.